old Saint Nick's got bourbon breath. It's so cold you could catch your death. A cop sold me some crystal meth. It's a merry fucking Christmas. Everything's so Christmassy. The streets are twinkling with frozen pea. My priest just sat on Santa's knee. It's a merry fucking Christmas. All the kids go to bed each night to dream what Santa brings them. Unless they're Jewish or Muslim or some other gypsy religion.
Welcome to Podcast on Fire 207, the 2015 Christmas special. And ho, ho, ho! It's Christmas at the network, and after nearly 52 shows from 2015 from the various shows on the network combined, we unwind with a relaxed Christmas special, which is really, you know, the structure isn't that grand. It's a couple of great voices from the network, past and present, getting together for a round table containing minor structure, but good spirits nonetheless. So let me take you around the room. I am KDB, of course, and I'm the boring one out of the lot. So we'll get that out of the way. And the first co-host to be introduced is, as always, the creator, the creative man who had a bright idea to talk Asian cinema in a podcast once upon a time. And he's the one we are truly thankful for, because he created Podcast on Fire. And therefore, when it's special occasions here at the network, we invite back Stuart Sutherland. So Merry Christmas and hello, buddy.
Hello. I'm like the equivalent of the old boss that shows up at the Christmas party just to see if the young secretary is still here.
I'm still here, yeah.
just got that. That button top on as well.
Secretary's got a mohawk for some reason nowadays. But now, like, you're not doing nothing just because you're not podcasting with us. You got your own podcast, Empire at filmsandswearing.com. So give those who do not know an idea of what you do over there aside from swearing at or with films.
All right. Well, me and my hetero life mate, Andy. let's see, like a summary of this year, we've done a Terminator season. So we reviewed all the Terminator movies.
Including Genisys.
Yes, which actually came in quite higher than it should have. But that's what happens when you have to like watch the movie over and over for a review. We knocked out the Ninja Turtles, comparing the original to the David Green, Michael Bay CGI atrocity.
Shit fest.
so Golden Harvest wins versus Michael Bay.
Then. We paid respect to the ones that have died by reviewing films like A Nightmare on Elm Street, They Live, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, and like a fucking boatload of like Van Damme in the middle as well.
That's like a eclectic but the fun mixture, it sounds like.
Yes.
And on your own terms as well. It's not like anyone's forcing you to like review our movies or anything. Like
we do try to have like a small theme. I think originally throughout this year it was like a connection with each movie. Mad Max and Fast and the Furious was cars.
Clever bots.
Or like the Babadook and Mad Max, Australia.
And was that too much work? Is that what you're saying?
It got to the point was like, there's 5 Van Damme films in a row. Why? Because it's Van Damme's in it. So, like, sometimes, like, it is quite, like architects put this together. The other time, it's like, oh, I've no seen Sudden Death in fucking ages.
Watch the current players on, like, the Pittsburgh Penguins and the Detroit Red Wings appear in cameos and what have you. So, there might be a Swede or two in that movie, because Detroit and Pittsburgh might have had some Swedes in the mid-90s on their teams. So,
that Powers Booth in it, or Booth Powers, whatever that over-charismatic cunt's name is. Sorry. Santa's been on the old eggnog.
It's films and swearing on fire all of a sudden here. But let's move on to, next on this truly international podcast, we say hi to the man giving us news and reviews of the latest out of Hong Kong screens and out on Hong Kong screens on his very own podcast, East Screen, West Screen. And occasionally he helps out submitting the Dynasty Report on this network. And that means we say hi to Paul Fox, who's normally in Hong Kong, but has done the sweet, heartwarming thing of going home for Christmas, so calling Florida, and welcome Paul Fox, and good morning for heaven's sake.
Hey, instead of ho, ho, ho. Yeah, it's great to be here as always, thanks for having me.
Repping Birmingham is our resident 12-year-old friend, Tom KW, who sits in as both guest host on, not guest host, co-host for heaven's sake, on Podcast on Fire and the Director Series when time allows, and normally sleeps till 4 p.m. in the afternoon. But we woke him up to say hi, Tom.
Woke me up early, you bastards. Hello, everyone. I'm here on this sunny day in beautiful Birmingham. It's good to be here with all you guys. I think this is the most people I've ever had on talking to at the same time. It sounds, I think it's the first, a record breaker, so it's good.
At least involving you, because I think tracking back to our second anniversary, Stuart, we had probably a record-breaking people on what we then dubbed, because the connections died. We dubbed it all
Phone on Fire.
And I think we might have had 6 or 7 sort of rotating people. Some we just roped in for like, hey, well, I have a question for you. Get your, you know, your loved one to answer a question. Like, get your wife on the phone. So, so that Stuart did. And I think we had about 7 or 8 on that show. But, back when Skype was so unreliable that you had to phone people up in the middle of the show. After being on microphone, so there it is.
This is better than the 2-minute cameo, well, 2-second cameo from a few years back from Tom.
Yep, it's substantial, and it was the mighty poignant on point. Hello, who's this? It's your friends, Tom.
I don't have any.
Hello.
So there it is, 3G for the win. And finally, every podcast needs a doctor to check up on us, to keep us in check, and to promise blowjobs on air. And we got one to do so. And his name is Dr. David Lamb, the classier movie watcher, despite all of that, out of any of us, because he's a big fan of, greater cinema, Wonka Wai cinema. So say hi, David Lamb.
Hi, guys. Hi to the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. Special hi to Stuart, Godfather.
No, just father of too many.
And Catman as well.
Yep.
Yep, he said with enthusiasm in
Catman
his voice.
Catman too.
I should mention that I'm thinking about retiring the doctor title and going with something more classier, like Clubber Lamb.
Nice.
Well, that will put fear in us to behave, because Clubber Lamb
Trouble,
is awesome.
Man.
Yeah. We certainly are frightened by your current Skype avatar, too. Like, I'll promise to behave. That baby looks mad. Mm-hmm. Alright guys, what are we doing this year in terms of content? Well, since everybody agreed on the format, rather than coming up with something new, I asked everyone this year again to bring something Eastern and or Western to chat about, whether it's a quick review of a Christmas movie, whether it's something non-Christmas related that still works well as chat fodder for the Christmas special. Movies, TV, music, drinks, books, it's an open forum. Anyone chime in at any time, chat away during this, our year-end show at the network. So for Podcast on Fire, that is the year-end show, though. This Week in Sleaze will have a year-end show as well that you will hear during the same day, yes. You'll hear this. So we'll end with a doubleheader. But what we do over there is obviously watch Charlie Cho movies and come up with filthy Christmas songs involving the grand pervert of Hong Kong cinema, Charlie Cho. Who's got a new movie coming out that I highly anticipate called Supermodel or Supermodels. So I might as well ask Paul, you know in detail the release date for Supermodel starring Charlie Cho and Nat Chan, right?
Yeah. I actually already played in Hong Kong.
Has it?
Yeah, it was back in, I want to say, late October, early November.
Oh, so it did come out.
Yeah, it was a one-hit wonder, a one-week wonder, as we call it. So
shot on video, nonetheless. But in the trailer, I saw Charlie introduce himself as Dr. Charlie. And I was like, boom, I'm in. I haven't seen Dr. Charlie in a while on screen. Or Charlie, for that matter. Did you go out and see it?
I didn't get a chance because it was only on screens for about a week at very limited screening, and I just was not able to make it out.
Did you wanna?
Yeah, I did. A couple of the Hong Kong crew did make it out, and it's unfortunately a very problematic film from what they've discussed with me.
Yeah. Well, we'll be the judge of that on this week, yep. Lisa. Alrighty, since David has to leave the soonest, I'm going to start this sort of round table. And guys, just chime in at any time if you have anything poignant, useful, not poignant, useless, or funny, or not funny to contribute. But nonetheless, I turn to David. I got to ask you just spontaneously, what's your favorite Wong Kar-wai movie to watch during the holidays, if you had to pick one?
Chungking Express, man. Gets me in the mood, gets the blood pumping.
The pineapples and the cranberries cover, the Fei Wong cranberries cover.
Yep, it's good stuff.
Fair enough. But and regardless, what do you want to talk about in general, whether you want to talk about a movie or some other topic, Christmas related or not? So bring us some chat fodder.
All right. You know, let's stick with the format and go with some highlights for some Asian films first. I think it's been a pretty subpar year for Asian films in general. I'm looking at my list now. I'm not sure if any other years, you know, movies like these two would make it on my list, but this year I have The Gigolo, number one.
That's I agree. I've seen The Gigolo because it's one of the rare recent category three movies that is not ashamed of it either.
Yeah,
and best actor Dominico.
My boy Dominic. He's looking good these days.
But we without bringing the tone down or anything, but if you haven't seen it, I can probably sell you The Gigolo based on
what's
this.
What's a gigolo, Uncle Ken?
Well, a gigolo has huge sidewang minute one in the movie.
Okay.
Yep. Working out to auto-tune horrible pop rap music and sidewang. Welcome to Hong Kong cinema bearing the category 3 rating. It was awesome.
Yeah. He also has exceptional tongue skills.
Yep, he does.
He serves as a great sushi table, apparently.
Oh my god, yes. Oh yeah, that's how awkward was that to watch in the theaters, Paul? Because I know you're not a great fan of that, and you probably didn't know that the movie was going to go to those lengths continually. So how awkward was it, if it was awkward?
Yeah, well, when the granny got involved, that was somewhat cringeworthy, I would say. But it was a fun film. I gotta side with David on this one. I'm not a big Category 3 fan, but for this year, it's one of the more fun films to have come out.
Yeah, you read that across the board, really. Well, the few critics I checked out that I sort of trust, including you guys, I saw Sean Tierney's review. They all sort of like, obviously it's not good, but man, is it fun. And that's something you can't say about many Hong Kong movies nowadays, you know, that they bring a sense of fun. Because this is also, guys, Thomas Stewart, totally not mainland cooperation going on here. Because it's very Hong Kong, very playing on its own terms, if you will. Mm. So that's refreshing to have something that feels truly Hong Kong.
The second film on my list would be SPL2.
No spoilers,
fashion punching. Hard-hitting action, reminiscent of The Raid. The story is, I would say, you know, pretty average, but the action is good. You know, I haven't seen something like this from Hong Kong in a while, and it was certainly entertaining. Not quite as good as the first one, you know, no Donnie, but good.
No Simon, either, for heaven's sake.
No Simon's in it.
Is he? I should have guessed. Yeah.
He's in it.
and Louis Koo as well, so that's that makes it a Hong Kong movie.
Yeah.
Am I totally dead wrong? Did I read retitle for this for another market? Crappy retitle or not? Anyone remember that? Because they didn't go with, what is this, SPL2, A Time for Consequences, or originally, right?
Sounds a bit right for what I saw.
But I think I read something else, maybe for American market or not, they sort of reduced it to two-word title, a punchier title. Maybe this sounded like reading.
Punch and kick.
Yeah, Punch and Kick 2. Not even Killzone 2, either. You know what I mean? Because it was Killzone in America for DVD once upon a time, and that got the internet stirred. Mm. Even if it's on the screen for 1 second. The entire movie was ruined! Ruined! Did you guys catch... well, you didn't, Tom, because you didn't want any spoilers, but Stuart, did you catch SPL 2? At one point.
I did acquire a copy of it, but only watched maybe 15, 20 minutes. Enough to see a few people get double knee dropped through a window and Tony Jazz Kid to get a nosebleed. I'm sorry, I can't spoil it for you, Tom.
What?
I have to leave you with that anticipation.
It. It now, man. Oh,
like, does she bleed out? You got to tell me. he solves a problem with a flying knee, let's just say that.
Oh, he's using his knees in this one. No way. I won't believe it. Tony Stark using limbs to hurt people. No way. I won't have it.
And gets quiet... transportation by elephant.
What? Elephants? No. I won't believe you.
On back four.
I won't believe you. I won't believe you.
Well, why didn't you finish it, Stuart? Did you get distracted by kids or cats?
Yeah, it's kind of things like, man, I maybe shouldn't have... Well, actually, more or less when the wife came in, I was like, fuck, I better turn this back over to Coronation Street.
I've behaved, dear. Welcome home.
There's a time and place for like Chang Soy Poi, like I'll just and just power down.
So that's what married life is like. You have to sort of move all your stuff to the garage. Yeah, well, sacrifices. Yeah, but living in fear, it sounds like. But you have to move all your stuff to the garage, all your like games and your man cave is in the garage if you even have one.
Yes, Tony Jaa doesn't hold a candle to David Platt. Sorry, that's a UK one there.
But you liked SPL2 in general, right, Paul? I remember your review was somewhat favorable, anyway.
Yeah, I thought it was entertaining, and that had some interesting fight core that's very reminiscent of for those familiar with Game of Thrones, they have this sort of extended sweeping shot of at the Battle of the Wall in season 4, I think, and so they do a similar thing in this prison fight where it's like a Goodfellas style one long take. Of like all the characters in this, you can tell they're doing a little bit of wire work, a little bit of CG stuff to blend it together, but it looks really great.
Would it make your top five if you did a top five from Hong Kong this year? Top three, even?
Yeah, as David said, it's kind of, I don't think it'd be top three, but it'd definitely be within my top 10 for sure. So
he's been busy, any old Tony Jaa? He's been quite busy recently, doing a lot of kind of bits. Did everyone see him in Furious 7 or Skin Trade?
No. I remember the days he'd done like two films and spent the rest of it in the forest.
I was about to say, his psychological break is way behind him now. He's back. Once upon a time, he felt he was like safari people were after him or something like that.
Okay, he was on Tony. Safari.
There was some daft thing like that. They said, like, people are following me.
Yeah, like...
They're called fans.
Taking that away. Give me your lighter.
No, they're producers from America. They want you to star in films.
He's in the new Kickboxer film as well, isn't he? I think the remake. He's in that as well next year. He did that Skin Trade with Dolph. Apparently they started making a comedy western together, and he's been sued because he took the role in Fast and Furious 7, and he shouldn't have done it apparently because he was doing that film, and then that film's like unreleased now. It's just kind of sitting there apparently unfinished. Can you imagine that, him and Dolph as cowboys? Yeah, sounds amazing.
Could be fun. I like Dolph. I never disliked him in anything. Masters of the Universe.
If it ever gets completed, yeah, that'd be great. I'd love to see that. Yeah, Skin Trade was a bit shit, but
was it really?
Yeah, it was just, I don't think it was good. The action was just, the story was, the cast was really good, and it was quite exciting to kind of see them all together. Paul Weller and Ron Perlman, and it was really good. But like, apart from the one fight between Michael J. White and Tony, the rest was just shot really just terribly and edited really terribly and shaky cam and just all over the place. But they did get, Tony and Michael J. White did get a decent scrap in the middle, but the rest of it was just, and the story was so bad that the material they were given was such a waste of a good cast. So
yeah, it seemed fairly like high profile, like getting Ron Perlman in there and stuff like that. But I remember seeing the trailer, although I don't follow action as much, but I saw like glimpses from a fight in the trailer and reacted to that very fact, oh my god, that looks well shot. Maybe that was the fight that was well shot, and the rest were of that kind that I don't get excited by. The shaky thing and the choppy editing.
Yeah. It was just a bit of a mess, really, but you know, waste of a good cast. But I think those two together had decent chemistry, so I think it would be nice to see them if they ever do complete that film. That'd be good to see.
All right, David, still your turn. What else is there?
I'll quickly go through my non-Asian list of super films this year. Top of the list, The Lobster, from the director of Dogtooth. Really good.
Oh, yeah. Colin Farrell, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Putting on some weight, acting with a mustache. Really good.
Difficult to do.
Second on the list, Mad Max, everybody's favorite.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I still haven't seen it, man.
That's great.
I need to jump on it, especially after our your interview, Kenneth.
With Mad Max, yes, indeed.
The man.
Hello, Mad Max. How are you?
Mel.
No, but it's it lives up to vibe. It's a great, obviously a lot of CGI to make the environments and combine it all together. But man, Stu and Tom and David and Paul, it is quite amazing. It looks physical because it is physical. And it's not much of a movie. It's about driving to one place and driving back to another place. But in between, it's exhausting, man. But in a good way. It's fun.
Yeah. Oh, epic.
So, yeah. So if they do another one, try and top this stunt work. Yeah, obviously, you can, but you have to do it for the right reasons and follow through and think it through. So, but obviously, hope they can get the same team on there, including Richard on the stunt team and George Miller, for heaven's sake. So hopefully they won't offer like Babe 3 to George Miller or Happy Feet 5 to George Miller in the meantime. Like, let him focus on Mad Max instead.
So continue with the list, Going Clear, the expose on Scientology. I strongly recommend it. It is fascinating.
Is it one of those shot from within documentaries? Did it get inside access?
Yeah, there's tons of inside access. You know, there's a lot of clips with Tom Cruise sporting the black turtleneck, being very serious.
And all the time having, for some reason, a boombox with him playing the MI theme.
Like,
I'm Tom Cruise.
Yeah, excellent documentary. And last on my list, Ex Machina. Alex Garland's little sci-fi thriller. Good effects. Story is pretty intriguing. I don't know if you guys have seen it, but it's pretty good.
No, but I hear that term all the time for some reason. I don't know what it means, but I haven't heard of the movie. But I like your list. That you're not going for the obvious. Like, your viewing habits are, you try to look for somewhat smaller. And obviously, I always appreciate a good doc, so I'm going to pursue that, definitely, if it's out there.
Louis Theroux's got one coming out next year, I think, same subject. He goes undercover in Scientology. Undercover, but
no,
he goes...
not really. I mean, he can't go undercover.
I was going to say, yeah.
Hello,
like,
I'm a Scientologist. Oh, you're Louis Theroux.
Glasses and a fake nose.
they'll probably let him in. If the horrible church, the Westboro church, let him in, then Louis can get in anyway.
He can get in there, Louis can, yeah. He somehow managed to charm himself in there. But yeah, it's weird, like, documentaries. It seems like a couple come out along the same lines, like about the same thing, like every year. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's two sides of the coin, kind of, to a subject. Like, nearly every year a documentary comes out, like two of them about the same thing. It's quite strange. But that sounds good.
Well, Louis always, you informed me of this and sort of recommended me more stuff from him, Tom, that Louis always comes at it with, he's not going in there to create a sensation. He wants to listen. He wants them to say their thing, but he also has a different viewpoint sometimes and he lets that be aired. You know, in the Westboro Baptist Church episode, you obviously need to counter some of the, in my opinion, madness that they are spouting, you know, but he plays it neutral in quite a balanced and sound way, you know, even when he's in prison, like, he talks with the people, like, he wants to let them, like, have a little bit of a voice, just rather than, like, look at this murderer.
Yeah, he kind of lets people, subjects, kind of stand on their own by not giving an opinion to it, like, not injecting his opinion on it. He just kind of presents it as it is, and it kind of makes it more real because they're kind of, there's no judgment on them, or they're not edited in a certain way. It's just kind of there on camera and manages to let them have a spotlight, whether it be bad or good. So, no, I've always loved Louis. Like, it's, it should be a good one when his film comes out.
Does he do stuff at all somewhat frequently, or it's just like...
Yeah, he still has docos kind of every year on the BBC. Yeah. I think his last one was on, it was on kind of like mass murders and people who have killed the family members and stuff. It was in one of the kind of hospital wards. It was really interesting. Heartbreaking at the points. Good recommend. I can't remember what it's called, but it was from last year.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
Yeah, I was going to say it. Jingle bells.
Does anybody have any, like, just make some Christmas sounds quickly before we get the first. So, well, any more entries on the list, David?
Yeah, I'll just quickly mention the tradition I have during the Christmas season is watching some really hardcore sex movies. So it's just a lead up to the holidays.
Well done, David. Well played.
This year I watched Love Actually Sucks.
What happens in that one?
That one, everything. A little bit of everything.
Is there any sucking?
The Notorious film by Scud, Hong Kong filmmaker Scud.
Oh yeah, I haven't seen that movie. By what happened to him, Paul? What happened to Scud?
Oh, he's still there. He's still making movies.
So yeah, that movie had the anti Viagra effect on me. You know, it's an eye opener. I would say give it a shot. Give it a shot. See how far you can make it through.
Wow. Well, the movie, I don't think I saw two of them. The movie I saw had it's sort of a decent drama. It had a gay theme, but it never sort of broke through. It wasn't impactful necessarily, but that was many years ago by now.
A lot of shower scenes, I assume.
And but I don't know if he's honed his voice since then. But I don't know. If you can't make a movie with your actual name and need to put on such a sort of silly, you know, name for yourself, I'm Scott, the director. You know,
I'm Mac G.
I was about to say, like use your damn name. What are you ashamed of? Like, no one thinks that's cool, regardless of the movie you're making. But hey, that's just
I do.
I just like to think of him as in terms of the movie Chud, right? So if you know what Chud stands for, play with the words a little bit and get to something else.
Well, that was the movie, not the director, though. So that was like, okay.
As if that wasn't enough, I also watched Love by Gaspar Noé.
Oh, no.
3D porn.
The 3D French Sex and Zen.
Wasn't it hardcore as well? XXX.
It's the lovemaking is pretty in your face, I would say.
Is it a comedy or is it super serious because it's French?
It is. I would say it's an art house film for sure, 100%. It's pretty Wong Kar Wai esque. A lot of monologues, a lot of long shots, beautifully shot.
Buts? Or there is no buts?
There's some buts. Yeah.
Yeah. Was he the guy who did Irreversible, or was that another? Okay, that didn't play well with me at all. Not because of the content, but I mean, it was graphic, but I thought the final tally, when he summed it up at the end, I was like, come on, man, don't go all pretentious on me, and he did. So I have not been keen on that director since then.
Yeah, Love is my my first movie with him, so I'm not sure if I'm gonna go back and watch some of his older stuff. But I thought it was good. I thought Love was good.
Simple and swift title.
Yep. 3 hours long, I think.
Oh my dear.
What?
Lord.
Something Ouch. Like that, yeah.
Is it worth sitting through? Does it have some sort of impactful theme and story to tell?
Well, I mean, it depends if you're really into, you know, French existentialism.
No.
Well, then you have your answer.
Fast forward button.
Give that one a miss, Kenny.
I'm too old to try and understand something. Or too dumb, really, to try and understand something like that. Give me simple 3D porn instead, you know. 3D sex and zen, and that's my game. It'll get people talking on the internet for sure. So it's all good. He creates ripples wherever he goes. I'd rather pursue Nymphomaniac. I haven't yet, but that was hardcore. But that's Lars von Trier, and I like Lars von Trier a bit more.
Watched that last year, leading up to the Christmas season, I believe.
I probably sort of waited for the full version to be released, like the both movies in one, and with the hardcore scenes. But I don't know if there is an edit out there of Nymphomaniac with the that explicit stuff.
You looking to see a bit of Shia LaBeouf cock, are you, Ken?
I don't know, Stellan Skarsgård cock, for heaven's sake. Like, Sweden represent!
Swedish cock is the best, clearly.
The thing is, I think Stellan has had his pants out and his cock out for like 10 movies already, because he's done movies in Sweden and other countries.
It's getting old.
What a lad.
He's Swedish. That's what we do.
So that's my list. A little bit of everything.
Right. Oh, I'm going to pursue that documentary, definitely. That's me and Tom always recommends documentaries to each other, like that's that. Stuart,
hello.
Yes, regardless if you had time to prepare anything, again, the father to cats and kids. So I wanted to ask you anyway, because you review current movies, you go out and watch current movies, or you watch them when they reach a disc, which is just a few months after they've been in the cinema. So regardless of what you brought, what were some of the highs and the lows of 2015 in the cinema or on disc?
David took all of my answers, funnily enough.
Oh, what?
No.
I apologize, Godfather.
Kowtow, now. Let me hear your head bang off the desk. Let's see, some of the ones I've picked up. Obviously, like, I'll brush aside all the Jurassic Worlds and the Marvels and all this stuff. Because like everyone will be hearing about that stuff.
But you know, in general, do you approve and like of the Marvel output, the 3-4 movies that we got this year?
I'm not tired of them yet. Like, next year will be like the test to see whether like the superhero genre has reached saturation or not, with it being like bi-monthly.
What,
superhero
really?
Movies? Pretty much. Starting with like February, we've got one, another one in March, another one in April, another one in June.
Oh no.
There's no build up, there's no anticipation November. More superhero films. So it's just like, it's just burnt out on them, man.
Like, there's almost just as much TV series as well now.
Yeah, yeah.
Whilst they're introducing more, so like you. Jeez. Like, it's everywhere.
It's everywhere, man.
Yep. There's that. There's obviously Star Wars is going to be catching up soon. But outside of all the big genre, major franchise movies, the ones that really captured my attention this year included, the obvious one was The Martian, Matt Damon of Mars.
Did you read a book?
Yes, aye. And, well, actually, I got it on Audible and had like a really good narration. And like when listening to it, like the guy reminded me of Matt Damon. So when it came to his casting, I was
Matt
like,
"Matt Damon, I'm reading." Yeah, Matt Damon.
Asked for a refund when I was finished. I had to like increase the speed that you listen to your book at, just like times it by two. It's back to normal. That's a horrible thing. So yeah, Matt and Damon in space, half of Hollywood on Earth, making up the ensemble cast like of like Kirsten Wiig. Chiwetel Ejiofor, the other dude from Dumb and Dumber that's not dumb.
What? Yeah,
the newsroom guy.
Oh, Jeff Daniels.
Yeah, Daniels. Everybody has to think. Like, we're all dumb. We don't remember his name.
That guy, Sean Bean, 30 other famous people. Everyone wanted to be in The Martian, I think.
And all standing behind monitors, therefore, because I assume like they can pack all these in at NASA HQ.
Yeah. So that was fun, like just like kind of going on the journey from like appreciating the book, seeing the casting decision, and then finally getting to see the movie and seeing that it pulled quite a lot of information from the book across. Like they never just took the title and made their own movie. Other ones, I quite enjoyed Chappie from Neil Blomkamp, even though I think Rotten Tomatoes like took a shit on it when it comes to like their rating system. Like I'm pretty sure that's like below 20. When it comes to the critics, I think it was like 17%.
No, it can't be that.
Dude, their scale doesn't even work properly because it's like they say if a critic rates something at like 3 out of 5 or something, that's still positive. So if you got loads of critics, they rate something out 3 out of 5, you get 100% film, but it's 100% film as average.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Like it's not, their rating system's flawed. I don't even look at it anymore because it's flawed. So that could be like, it's just an average film, but it's 100% perfect. Like, it doesn't make sense. It's very flawed, the writing system is. If you're reading to how to do it, it's not good.
It sounds organized. Like, everybody shit on Chappie. Like, Wolverine and all that.
But yeah, like, it was. It kind of brings in, like, a couple gangbangers pick up Chappie, who's like...
which type?
let's see. These are South African. So...
That's why people were disappointed. Like, we're not our kind of gangbangers. We'll walk out of here now.
Gangbangers.
Like, let's make this local. A couple of Jakeys find a robot.
Nice.
And yeah, like fucking Wolverine, like Hugh Jackman, like plays basically the villain in this film, which is like very refreshing for him. Him in his khaki shorts and mullet haircut.
Yeah, the mullet was pretty rough, man.
But yeah, I quite enjoyed that one. And The Kingsman, that was another one that caught me by surprise.
That's Kingsman surprised me as well. I thought it was going to be terrible, but it wasn't too bad.
Yeah, essentially, it was a case of when I was buying Chappie on Blu-ray, I needed to buy something else to get them for 20 quid. I'll may as well bite the bullet with this, see how it goes. And like that just blew me away at like how... Just like how different it was and refreshing on like this sort of secret agent. We're not really a James Bond movie, but we're spies and we're British and just trying to be all hip and just the fucking banter between Colin Firth and Samuel Jackson. It's like they weren't acting.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's a bit too, like, try hard for its own good. Like, it's a bit too, look at us, we're really cool. We're a James Bond film, but we're more youthful and we're going to have swearing in it and jokes, you know, about anal sex in it on and stuff like that. But yeah. Samuel Jackson was fucking terrible in it. How he got lumbered with that lisp. Like, what? Why? Why did he? If that was the character, like, I don't get it. If he's just chosen himself to act like that, but fuck, every time he spoke dialogue, I was just like, no, dude, why? Like, there's no point at all in doing it.
I'm pretty sure, like, when it comes to his direction, is it right? Okay, you're 12 years old and you've just bit your lip. Go.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, he must have come to set one day and he's been bored as fuck. And like, you know what? I'm gonna switch it up here. I'm gonna mix it up. I'm gonna do a lisp. See how that goes down. And no one just wants to fuck with him because it's Samuel L. Jackson. They're like, just leave him alone. Just let him do his lisp. You know what? He's enjoying himself. We're getting some good footage off him. He's not just pissing around with snakes. He's actually doing some acting here. It's good.
So, and obviously, I'll make this my last pick. Like, going to see Star Wars was, like, eventful. Well, actually, it took me 2 attempts to see Star Wars. I, like many others, attended the midnight screenings, like, across the world.
Nice.
Yeah, ours was probably like the only one that everyone got sent home 45 minutes in.
No, did it break down?
Well, I say 45 minutes in, they never played the film.
Oh, man.
Like, we get there like half an hour early because you want to find a good seat. Get in, sat down, get your popcorn, get like your syrup-filled slushy drink. Like, I'll have the Tango Blast, please. Yes, mix both flavours. I'm going to need the energy.
Yes, I want a heart attack.
By the time it reached 1:45 in the morning, the projectionist essentially walked into the hall saying, "I'm so sorry, we can't get the film to work."
Oh my god!
No way!
And like, this is in the digital age, and they're saying we've downloaded the movie and we've downloaded the license to show the movie, but they refuse, like, merging the two together was not working. It kept refusing the license that they were sent. So they'd spent the past hour receiving new licenses from Disney to merge it with the film, and each and every one of them was refused. So at that point, you could just tell, like, this was a full house.
Angry Scottish men and women.
The balls on this lassie. Like, walking in front of a crowd of hardcore Star Wars fan, midnight on the release of, like, a film they'd been waiting for, like, say, 30 years. You could tell half the crowd were trying to force choke her. So they just all had the same expression. And they're just, nah, it's a film, son, come on, stop it.
Were they all armed with lightsabers as well? Like, so they had, like, implements to start.
It just got, like, verbal offy quick. They just started heckling the woman.
Aww, that's bad, that is. They should have, like, come out and said that, oh, we don't have the new one, but we do have The Phantom Menace on DVD if you want to watch that.
And there are people shouting, it's like, we're all here, just shove something else on. And I was like, I had the good dinosaurs actually supposed to be all right. Let's. And they wouldn't let me. And there was one person at the back of the hall that kind of broke all the tension by shouting, I've already took my eckies. What am I supposed to do now? And that translates to, I've already took ecstasy. What now?
Oh, man.
This person was ready to go on a journey to outer space.
He probably was on his journey already. I'm enjoying it. It's awesome. Hasn't started yet. What?
Like, imagine him trying to walk home now.
Oh, man. He's still walking home now, isn't he? You know.
So, yes, I was sent home at like 1 in the morning with like a full-on sugar rush.
Full boner, sugar rush.
It was so cold and hard.
Sleep it off.
I eventually got around to seeing it on Friday. So I'm glad at that point, but Jesus. Like, for all the, like, you sit there and say, man, I hope it doesn't happen to us. And it did. Now what?
What did you think, Stu? It's avoiding spoilers completely.
It was all right.
Okay.
Like, I've never been like a giant Star Wars guy. I was more or less going along with a group of guys that was really keen. Is like, fuck it, Star Wars midnight, why no? And so when I came out of it, I enjoyed it. It seems to have done a lot better than I guess the previous 3 did. But I never really took the chance to watch those. So Phantom Menace could be better, but I can't tell just yet.
Probably not. It's just a dull film, Phantom Menace. Oh. I mean, never mind the Jar Jar Binks stuff. Like, the problem with Phantom Menace, the only one out of that prequel trilogy I saw, was that it was for kids and extremely talky. Mm-hmm. Like, it's political, silly Star Wars. You know, but so I didn't gel with Phantom Menace. But
Tarantino in space.
Well, not even talky cool or anything. They weren't walking down the Imperial Death Star corridor set to cool music or anything.
In suits.
a lot of discussions about trade embargoes.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's partly for kids, but as adults, this isn't thrilling necessarily. So, but I never went on a "he raped my childhood" thing for 10 years after that. No, I just sort of just let it go.
And other than that, one little note for those that have seen it, I'm quite impressed to see that the Annoying Orange has gotten some work again. People have seen the film will have gone, you're the tenth person to make that joke.
We'll see if we catch up, those of us who haven't seen it, with that joke. All right, then.
With that joke, yeah.
Did you have a chance to see it yet, Paul? You were planning to attend a screening when going home.
Yeah, we went out Friday morning to the early senior show and got in no problem. And
the earlier senior show, awesome.
Yeah,
did you have to show ID?
No ID.
You're far too young.
got the early bird special prize. And the house, I'd say, was about 60% full when we got in and only at about 80% by the time the movie started. So, but we were going to the normal, non-IMAX 2D version, because I'm not into all the big expensive add-ons that they try and sell today. More and more, I find the movie-going experience is just not as fun. And I've talked about this before. I kind of would have preferred to have just streamed it at home on day one, mm-hmm. Because there's always some problem. There's always some guy or somebody talking or commenting, talking at the film. This time, the guy who was behind us, it's a stadium seating. So the people who are behind you are slightly raised above you. So their feet are basically at your head level. And my wife was just saying, there's something, it smells really bad.
Oh, no.
And it was the guy's feet right behind her. And so she was like, not happy the whole time.
Did we go to a 4D screening? What's going on?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, man, I'm cool.
I never knew Wookiees smelled so bad, right? It's just... but, it was fine. Yeah, I kind of agree with the take on the film. I am a pretty big Star Wars fan, but at this point, I think movies... they're talking about the superhero movies and stuff, and it's just so much overload now in the build-up and the hype, and there's just so much of that I think you can never be completely satiated with anything that comes out.
There's no time to get excited about it now. There's no time for that build-up because it's just there, isn't it? Like every month there's something, like either a TV show or a film, and it's just completely burnt out on it now.
And that's going to happen to Star Wars, if I understand things correctly, that they're planning a lot of movies, it's going to be a yearly thing now.
They start shooting in January again, I think. I was reading the other day.
Well, and they've got Donnie's movie coming out before the next one. So, yeah, they're planning on, just like Marvel stuff, they want to do at least a movie a year, maybe two.
I don't know about that. But okay, if you do little sidetracks in the storylines and feature secondary characters and what have you, maybe that would be interesting. But I liked it when you had 3 or 4 years in between original trilogy style, even though I wasn't alive when they came. I was alive when it came out, but I didn't see them until TV. Yeah, but there it is. I rewatched The New Hope yesterday on Laserdisc, of course. So that was still nice. Good. Still good fun. Not my favorite out of those. That still belongs to Empire. But pre-special edition tinkering and all of that. Those,
I was going to say, did George Lucas get his hands on it yet?
Well, that was 1993. The special edition did get a Laserdisc release as well, because the special edition, or the three of them that came out, they came out before Laserdisc was still alive back then. So you have special edition on Laserdisc, but you can still easily get the originals if you pursue Laserdisc, that is. So the more you look at the comparisons to what he did in 97 and subsequently through the years trying to perfect his vision, it's just, come on. Never mind that rant. Stu, any more highs and lows?
Well, actually, I'll throw out a documentary I just watched recently that was quite interesting. The Red Army.
Oh, I have that on my queue. The hockey documentary.
Yes, aye. The Soviet Union's like hockey team, like during the Cold War, like dominating ice hockey, I guess.
Oh yeah, I think you tell me about it, this, Ken.
It's on at least one Netflix region somewhere. I have it on my queue. Mm. That was a dominating team, all right. But they were not very wealthy athletes, and they were probably steered from above quite strictly from
yes,
the powers that be.
It does show you like a lot of footage of like basically the training camps. And like it's almost like a militarized zone that they're in.
It's like X Factor, but with less teeth.
it's quite interesting. Then like them trying to interview the players now, and they're just like, California boy, you don't know what you're talking about. I won't answer these questions today. And he just sits with his phone and starts texting people.
Yeah, you wonder why they, now that we've passed that here, right, if there's some kind of dishonor in speaking about that, speaking of those times. I don't know, because I don't know of the Russian mindset or the Soviet mindset. But I'm definitely interested in that, because it's quite a unique era.
But yeah, that's me.
Right on. Paul Fox, last year was yours, when you were on this Christmas special, you had your Hallmark sweet and sugary Christmas movie marathon. But what do you bring to the table this year, unless it's Hallmark sweet and sugary Christmas movie marathon season 2?
Yeah, well, I'm about halfway through that. I was hoping to actually bring the two demon Christmas movies that are out currently. One is called A Christmas Horror Story. And the other is called Krampus, and they're both basically about Krampus. Mm-hmm. But I've unfortunately fallen short in my attempts to get out and watch those. So, but I do want to talk about something that has captured my interest for the past 6 weeks, probably more than anything else. And that is a new TV series called Into the Badlands from the AMC. And so this is I have a difficult time explaining it to people, because it's just such a weird kind of mashup of a show in terms of the narrative. But it stars Daniel Wu, who, you know, fans of Hong Kong cinema should recognize. It's a six-episode run, and actually tonight, I think, is the final episode. No idea of if there's going to be a second season or not. Based on what I've seen so far, I hope there will be, though. And it's supposedly, at least according to the things I've read, based on the Journey to the West, you know, the Monkey King story. But it's really nothing like that at all. And I've tried through a series of written reviews to piece together the points where I see the connections to that original story. So this is sort of a post-apocalyptic world that's based in kind of the Louisiana, Mississippi area of, you know, culturally of the United States. They never give it a specific, you know, location. Everything's a bit fantasy-ish in terms of, you know, the names and the terms they use. But it's a martial arts series, first and foremost. And the martial arts direction is done by Stephen Fung. Stephen Fung, yeah.
Oh, so he directs action nowadays.
Yeah,
as well.
He's the action director for the series, and he's the executive producer for the show. But the show's concept comes from Alfred Goh and Miles Miller, names who probably don't mean a lot to people, but they've worked on a number of, you know, big Hollywood films, things like, you know, Spider-Man and whatnot. Miles Miller also has credits back in the Sammo Hung TV series in the 90s, Martial Law. It's something that caught my eye because it's Daniel Wu in a TV series. I really wanted this to be successful, but I think it's such an oddball thing that it might not be catching the attention of the public as much as I'd hoped, because it's like martial arts mixed with sort of plantation style, you know, Gone with the Wind culture. They kind of do some world building with it that's interesting, but the story itself is somewhat compact. It seems like they're trying to build to a Journey to the West style story, but they haven't quite got there yet. And Sonny, I guess, is supposed to be the equivalent of the Monkey King. He's kind of he works for this guy called the Baron. And there are, I guess, like 7 barons who control the region. Nobody has guns anymore because that's just what the narrative tells us. So everybody is a martial artist. And he's the baddest of the bad, apparently. And there are a number of other characters, but he's really the only Hong Kong presence that I think people would recognize. I kept hoping Stephen Fung would make a cameo at some point, but so far that hasn't happened. You know, the cast is pretty strong. The acting is very good. The martial arts direction is top notch. It, you know, if you remember back to some of the stuff they were doing in the Hercules and the Xena series back from before, which borrowed heavily from a lot of Hong Kong cinema in terms of some of the martial arts choreography that they were doing then. So like, for example, in the Xena pilot, it's basically a straight derivative ripoff of Bride with White Hair. So it's similar here, except they've kind of upped their game. So it's very violent, a lot of blood that goes on, no real sexy time as such. It fits somewhere between, I'd say, Walking Dead and, like I said, Hercules or the Xena show. It's somewhere in between there.
How is, considering this is going on American TV, there's a lot of people involved in the production and all of that. Does the action direction lean towards something more Western, or does it feel very Hong Kong in style there, and therefore is it better?
No, it's very Hong Kong in style. I mean, if you've watched Hong Kong movies, you can actually kind of pick out movies that they're borrowing from. For example, I think at the end of the first episode, there's a fight sequence in the rain. But what's really different is, again, the style. Like, so in one of the episodes, Daniel Wu's being attacked by a couple of assassins, and these assassins are wearing, like, you know, bowler hats, and, you know, they just look, and they're dressed like Southern gentlemen, but using, you know, kind of Asian style swords. It's their weapon of choice. So stylistically, I think, is what keeps me, you know, watching it and seeing where they go, and that and Daniel Wu. I'm hopeful that he can at least get as much success as maybe Maggie Q got with her Nikita series, you know, that he can get a couple seasons out this and get a bit more exposure. And he's somebody who, depending on the role, it can be hit or miss, right? So if we talk about the movie that shall not be named, where he was kind of an over-the-top villain, pretty terrible in that, right?
Yeah, but yes, make it, I need to stay cheery so don't mention that movie. Right?
Yeah, here he's very underplayed, somewhat stoic in some ways, but he you know, comes across really good in, you know, the times he's on screen and the acting that he does. My one real complaint with him is that he's a bit too pretty, though, because this is supposed to be sort of a post-apocalyptic thing. He kind of looks too good. You know, they have him shirtless. I guess he's got kind of a William Shatner kind of no shirt requirement in a couple episodes.
His contract.
Yes.
I need no shirt on this scene.
He just looks too good sometimes, like he's doing a male product commercial, as he's known to do in Hong Kong.
Maybe it's taking cues from Donnie. Take your shirt off, man.
Could be.
It's got to be done.
Gotta be done.
Have not seen it, and you're a fan of, you know, Hong Kong action, Hong Kong cinema, this is something that you'll definitely want to check out. It's, again, fairly digestible. There's only 6 episodes in this first season, so it's pretty well contained. It's interesting to look at in terms of the art direction. Some of the reviews I've seen of people talking about it on, like, Amazon have said they think that the dialogue is a little wonky. I don't think so. I think it works well for what they're trying to do. You know, it's not going to be getting acting awards, you know, that's not what it's trying to do. But action-wise, I think it's, you know, it's a martial arts show, and there's not a lot of these kinds of things out there. So it's nice to see something a little different.
Is it getting a prime spot at AMC, you think? I mean, they're not running it in the middle of the night, I suppose, I assume.
I couldn't tell you, because I had to buy a subscription, and so I have to watch it streaming. So I'm not sure exactly in terms of the ratings and whatnot, how it's doing. Tonight's the final episode, I think. So I'm hopeful, like, maybe within a week or so, they may have an announcement as to whether it's going to be picked up for a second season or not.
Unless they blow him up in the final scene, then you'll, okay, I guess that's that. Like I remember that was way back in the day. I watched the John Woo TV series Once a Thief that only ran one season, and that's what they did at the end of that. It just blew them up. So there it is. Adios.
So with Dolph, was that Dolph again? Who was in that?
No, as far as I know, he didn't guest on that. But you had Michael Wong as the villain, and Nicholas Lee from the X-Files was one of the key crew. And yeah, it was a good. I know what you think. John Woo directed a movie with Dolph that might have been a pilot for TV, Blackjack. But Once a Thief was earlier, I think.
Oh, okie dokie.
But I remember watching that series, and it was sort of half good fun, but it didn't take a week to find out whether it was renewed or not. Nope, all evident in the final episode and final scene.
So they all die?
Yep, that's what it... exactly, it was so like, we have the alternate. Either they walk away from the burning building, or they don't. They don't.
Amazing.
So there it is. It's good fun. At least watch the Once a Thief, the first episode. It's feature length. Because you have Michael Wong as the villain and John Woo directed it as well. So it's decent fun. And it's good also, Paul, that it seems like they hired an action director, and the action director for Into the Badlands is the one calling the shots and finalizing sort of the sequence, rather than it going through tons of hands and then being sort of watered down along the way with bad camera work. So it's good that Stephen Fong is taking reins and he's allowed to.
Yeah, I would hope that if it does get a second season, that they try and bring a few more, a few more Asian faces into the mix. Mm-hmm. Because pretty much everybody else is a Western actor. The main guy, he's kind of the villain, and I guess he's kind of like the Bull King in terms of representation. So he, you know, because Daniel Wu is his like right hand guy, but at the same time he's a bad guy at times, and he's played by an actor called Martin Kasakis. I think he's from New Zealand, and he's just got an amazing screen presence. Every time he's on screen, he's just kind of, you know, chewing the scenery. He's one of these character actors who just, you know, soaks up the light whenever they're on screen. So again, it's got a really good cast, but you know, I'm curious as to how much producer power that Stephen Fung actually has. Daniel Wu is also one of the producers, but then there's quite a few other producers listed as well. So if it's successful, I'm hopeful that maybe they'll bring over a couple more people from Hong Kong.
And the rare sight of Daniel Wu doing martial arts in anything. That was always the surprise to me, because I watched his dramatic performances first, and then hearing him in interviews, yeah, I was trained in Wushu. Like, whoa, 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 cool. Let's see more of that. But it's been largely, we've seen the actor. And the good actor, though. I mean, I'm not a fan of all his films, including that one. But when he's understated, and even when he's nonverbal, he's really, really good.
Yeah, no, he's really good here, and his action, he did a lot of training for the role, and it's pretty top notch. So just see it for that; it's worthwhile.
Tommy boy, I know you've been busy with real life stuff. You've been moving during this fall and winter.
Growing up,
yeah, by moving. but anyway, the mic is yours. Thrill us with what 12-year-olds like yourself consider to be chat-worthy, hugely or mildly Christmas related chat-worthy content. So.
Well, I thought the Teletubbies reboot was unnecessary. didn't need that.
Such a reboot? I don't know.
No, I don't think so, man. I don't think so.
I could defer that. That is true.
What?
My son watches the reboot.
He's got kids.
There is a reboot. CGI or?
No, they're still in the suit. Maybe the set, CGI, but yeah.
Get it out of here.
HD, bright, shiny, new sets, same suits.
Nightmare fuel.
Oh, just as depressing.
I'm looking at images now. They look like they've had a bit of a makeover, the old Teletubbies do. Pose looking good.
They've tightened them up a little.
Tightened it up. Yeah, they've had a bit of work done, yeah. Okay, no, in all seriousness, what have I seen this year? Cinematic, John Wick. John Wick, it was came out last year, I think everywhere else, but we got it this year in the UK, February, March. Really good, really unexpected, slow burn film, kind of really good antidote to a lot of the fast-paced, you know, eye candy superhero films. This was a very slow burn, but really good payoff. Keanu just kicking ass, shooting people in the head, like point blank. Just judo, jiu-jitsu in... Jiu-jitsu and people just left, right, and center. People going through fucking tables.
Is this from the Luc Besson camp of action movies?
It's not. No.
See, it always gave off that feel. That's probably like that's his crew making those fun digestible, sort of transporter, like from Paris with Love style movies. But
first time directors, as far as I can remember, a duo of directors. I can't remember, but I think the one of them was a first time director. The other one might have been an actor, but this was their first kind of foray, and it was kind of a collaboration between those two and Keanu. And you can tell he's had a hands on approach because it just feels like he's kind of been part of the film and he's had kind of a lot to do with just the story, and because he fits the role like a glove. He's kind of like assassin who kind of comes out of retirement because someone kills his dog. No spoilers. It happens in the first like 10 minutes, but it's really it's really, really good and really, really solid. And I think they're making I think the second one's already started shooting, so look forward to that. Did anyone see that?
Have it on my list based on the fact that people say that it is good, even the action is well shot.
Yep, clear, good.
I mean, it's gritty and bloody and all of that, but still, even that kind of action can be all too dizzying for an old man like me, so...
Yeah, I just watched his movie Knock Knock, so I'm kind of a...
Ooh, how was that?
Not so great.
I've heard people like hail that movie as a sort of like you shouldn't take it seriously, but when I watched the trailer, another sort of house invasion movie. I love Keanu as a person because he seems like a good guy, but it just like I've seen this movie, and you need to make like even if you do it tongue in cheek. No, I don't need to waste my time with this, you know, and not a big Eli Roth fan either. His Cannibal movie I want to see, but...
Well, it's a remake of a film from the 70s, I think.
Is it Cannibal Holocaust remake?
Knock Knock.
Oh, okay, yeah, sorry. Yeah, yeah, I think what you were talking about, Ken, was...
The Green Inferno.
Inspired by Cannibal Holocaust, I think.
Yeah, it is one of his favorite movies. He even put the director Deodato in Hostel 2 or 1 and 2 as
nice.
So it's a nice little homage there. But it's a Green Inferno was one of those, like it was supposed to come out, then something happened, and then it took like half a year or a year until it came out, probably.
Yeah, I've seen it. It's not bad. Decent little genre film.
Yeah, so, does it deserve a sequel, John Wick?
I mean,
speaking of oversaturation, like, they took his second dog.
Second dog, yeah, he took his cat this time. I think it does. It's nice to see. There's been a couple of films, like, this year that have been the same, that have been like that, that have kind of been a bit more quiet, so kind of throwbacks to films of the 70s and 80s, are kind of a bit more kind of laid back with the scripts and the dialogue and stuff, and really takes time with the characters, which I think has been good. Nice return to the filmmaking of old.
He's uneven in movies, Keanu, but for some reason I've always liked him. He's always sort of carved his own path, and the more you know about him, learn about him rather, as a person, just it's hard to dislike his choice when he seems like a level-headed person, you know.
I think it's nothing, it's not flashy or big or doesn't do anything spectacular, but just really, really solid, good choreography, you know, solid story, good emotional beats, just does everything you want, really. Very, very successful, I think, in kind of doing what it set out to do, which is create this kind of darkish kind of crime action film. So very, very good. I will be seeing the sequel, hopefully, if we get it over here this year. Skin Trade, we already mentioned. Kingsman, we already mentioned. It Follows, I saw this year, which was confusing, gorgeous to look at, but kind of lose a bit of its steam towards the back end. If anyone doesn't know, it's about this like kind of, you'd call it STD that goes around that kills people when you get it, like you have sex with people.
It reminded me of The Ring.
It was a bit.
The Ring was her like vagina, but
yeah, The Ring. The back ring. It was a bit like that, kind of like this thing that spreads and people, you know, are exposed to it and it kind of comes chasing them. It's a really good, like, moments and good kind of build-ups and like a suspense and very creepy. Like, the first time I've actually been creeped out by a film in a long time. But kind of lose a bit of steam in its own kind of world, really, because they try and make it, bit too hipstery. Like, I don't really want to say that. I don't think that's a solid criticism on a film, but it feels a bit like that with it's going out its way to kind of create a world that's timeless, but it adds kind of bits and pieces from each periods, and it's a bit off kilter because of that. It's a bit strange. Can't quite latch on to kind of what's going on at times, but
sounds like a scenario that shouldn't be confusing though.
Yeah, no, the story itself is straightforward about what happens. It's just the kind of the payoff about where that leads and what does it mean for characters and stuff is a bit confusing. But yeah, I'd recommend it just because it's quite a slow, kind of nice, solid build up, well written. But yeah, lose a bit of steam, but not too bad. Obviously, got to mention Spectre. Saw that. That's probably the best favorite film of 2015 so far. If I do manage to squeeze in Star Wars this year, we'll see. But yeah, Spectre was amazing. Very unlike the Daniel Craig films before it. It almost feels like a Roger Moore film of the 70s with Daniel Craig in it. So very Bond-like of old, but nothing really like his last three films, which I think everyone kind of got used to with it kind of being a bit of a grittier reboot. It's a lot sillier than the last three films and a lot more kind of takes more time out to be kind of a bit more humorous and a bit more kind of silly, which is, again, can split people. The Bond films themselves are quite, you know, down the middle with people in terms of who your favorite Bond is and, you know, you like this person because they're a bit more humorous, like this person because they're a bit more serious. So it's an opinion splitter, but I loved it. It was, it's a James Bond film, for God's sake. You know, what do you want? Like, it was all I needed.
You want one every year.
Yeah, please.
You know what's fascinating to me as someone who doesn't watch a lot of these recent movies? Not out of disinterest. I like James Bond. You know, not everyone, but I'm a fan to an enough extent. But my point is, I love it when people really love something, top three of the year, and another viewer really hates it. Sometimes there's no middle ground for movies, which is kind of fascinating. You would think that some people would go like, yeah, it was okay. But it seems like there's only love and hate sometimes.
Yeah, it does. It does, from what I've read and what people have said. It does seem kind of very aggressive splitting on it. But no, I loved it. I recommend it. I think if you're a Bond fan, it kind of does everything. I don't know whether it's as good as the previous films of Daniel Craig's, but it does everything a Bond film sets out to do. So, yes, very entertaining. Did anyone see the Death of Superman Lives, the documentary? Yes, on the cancelled Superman film? Yes. Yeah, I thought it was very good, very informative. Probably one of the best docos I saw this year.
You know, we're very privileged to, you know, when the time passes, like a project, you know, goes in a different direction, time pauses, and we can look back unfiltered. It's not like this is that Hollywood execs are saying what they should say because you can't say anything bad. No, it seems like everyone is allowed to be honest about this because it just didn't work out and it went through so many phases. And I love that where we could get an unfiltered look at a production that didn't work out because, you know, as everyone, I remember when it was all on the cards that Tim Burton is going to direct Nicolas Cage as Superman.
Mm.
And it just didn't happen for whatever reason.
It was weird. It kind of offers, offers a lot of insight. I mean, even, you know, Burton plays an active role in it, which is good. They could have probably done it and just looked back and got other cast members and people. I mean, they didn't get Nicky Cage, but they did get Tim Burton. And, you know, there's a lot of footage, kind of stock footage of Nicolas Cage and trying on the suits. And there's a lot of artwork and talking about scripts. And your boy Kevin Smith, Stu, in there talking about his little crack at writing script as well. And have you seen it, Stu, did you say? Yeah.
Yeah,
you've seen
it? I chipped into the Kickstarter. Maybe about 2 years ago. Just so I could get my copy of the film.
It was it was really good, really interesting. Have you seen it yet, Ken?
No, I haven't. But my question to you is, based on what you see here and their kind of thoughts on the story that they were gonna do, did it seem like it had potential, or does it look now that they didn't know what they were doing?
I don't know. It just seemed like there was a lot of uncertainties with the film, so it could have gone either way. It wasn't like they knew what they were doing, but I suppose there's a lot of uncertainties when Tim Burton did Batman. I mean, everyone looks back at it now as I think it's a bit dated, but I think everyone still thinks they're solid films. But just then casting Michael Keaton as Batman was strange. So I think with this, it was the same thing. I don't know whether it could go either way, like whether it could have been really weird or, but the story sounded weird, but good. I mean, it sounded like it would have definitely been a Tim Burton film. You know, it wouldn't have been kind of him following the straight and narrow down the Superman path. It would have kind of been his own very strange, a bit dark twist on it. So it would have been interesting to see.
I think the interesting thing for me was they had these pictures of Nick Cage in a suit that circulated for years that people looked at and said, oh my God, that looks so terrible. And they were really kind of bad pictures up on the internet. They weren't very clear. Mm. And this film showed you so much more. It showed you the development of the suit and the final stages, which really looked pretty good. It looked like something that could have been, you know, passable and entertaining. And also, if anybody's seen any of Kevin Smith's stand-up shows where he talks about the famous giant spider thing, that they go back into that here, and you actually get to see the producer that he was talking about, because they interview him as well at certain points, and it sort of talks about how the script just kind of got derailed over time with different rewrites and whatnot. So there's, it's really interesting.
Too many cooks in the kitchen kind of thing with it. It felt like there was so many people who had a little go on the script and a lot of people saying this and that, that I think, yeah, there's probably too much of a, not enough of a creative kind of one way between Burton and Cage. It was more kind of everybody coming in and kind of, I want this, I want that. And that could have caused it to be a bit, you know, a bit of a mess, but we'll never know. But yeah, no, Paul's right. It's more like, The photos, they actually show you the video that the photo has been captured from. So you kind of see it moving and kind of Nicolas Cage moving around and stuff, and it looks a lot better than those shitty, like, kind of Polaroid pictures that have been circulating the internet before the doco came out.
It was more a given thing that Nick Cage could still be cast in a big movie back then because he was still riding high from his action hits or what have you. So it brings a perspective in where you're, I mean, he's still working, but it's changed, you know, the landscape. The demand for Nicolas Cage movies has changed. And by the way, that was the producer that, according to Kevin anyway, said that he didn't want Superman to be flying around in this movie. Which was, I don't know if they even recapped that, but yes, that was also the producer who wanted him to fight the giant spider, and eventually got a giant spider in a movie he produced called Wild Wild West. So he got his spider finally.
He's really obsessed with that spider, right?
quickly, just the Poltergeist remake wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. A Deadly Adoption, Will Ferrell's take on the is it the Lifeline films?
Sure,
Oh, was that this sort of a deliberately cheesy made for TV movie but played super seriously?
It was kind of like, I know I'm not very familiar with those films, but I've seen like a few like clips here and there, and if they've been on TV, I've kind of having a look at it, and I think it hits it, you know, the nail on the head, really. It really gets it bang on. It's not funny. It's kind of like, it's almost just like they're just trying to make, is it actually a proper Lifeline or whatever, Lifetime film? Yeah. I think it's actually just them making a Lifetime film. I think everyone was thinking it was kind of a big parody. It is to an extent, but it's almost like just kind of a straight film in that canon. So it's not kind of funny, it's not kind of taking the piss, it's just like a straight, weird, strange, very cheesy like TV movie, but it's very, very entertaining.
It's like when he made the Spanish film as well.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Wasn't too bad, to be honest. I like the Spanish movie that I don't remember the title of it now, but
My Papa or El Papa or something.
Maybe so, yeah. But it, I like that because, yes, he's rich and all of that, and there's people who want him to appear in the big movies and the comedies, but I like that he and his co-workers, co-cast here, just kind of, let's do something that will just tickle us, you know, and if we have to put up our own money, I'm not saying they did, then we could probably do that, because that would be so much fun to try and do that, to follow your own sort of creative path rather than just flow with the system. It's a cool thing, I think, to go from making big to small and back and forth and what have you. So yeah, good on Will. Okay, for me then, it's not Power Rangers this year, I promise you that. That was a joke that got tired after the first year, so I'm not gonna do it 3 years in a row. But since you can turn to any corner of the internet pretty much and find discussion about it, I thought I'd you know, bring and talk of something that's been on many people's minds for a long time. So, and it's merely a Western pick. Yeah, so I watched Star Wars, the holiday special.
Oh, I knew he was gonna twist it. I knew
always
it was
a twist.
Always a twist with Kenny.
Because why go out and see something? I'm like Paul. I don't want to go with be where people are and watch movies, you know. So Force Awakens, I'll see it eventually. But the holiday special, oh boy. I mean, before I go into my notes, maybe I should just summarize it as, oh, cocaine. It's trippy. And not in a good way.
That's weird.
It was, as many people know, shown once in 1978 on American TV, you know, across different stations, but still just at one time, just before or after Thanksgiving, though, so it's not a strictly a Christmas special. There was even a screening in Canada at one point, and even a Swedish showing I read on Wikipedia. Never something I caught and taped, and Lucas, George Lucas, was not hands-on on this one at all, and has gone on record saying how much he hates it. And it's one of the few times nowadays that I can agree with George Lucas. This should not be improved or anything by improving effects, what have you. It just shouldn't exist at all. And I thought it was going to be an easy job here, just to go and watch this 30-40 minute special. It's 90 minutes.
Yeah, it's like a feature length, isn't it?
It was a 2-hour event on TV. Mind you, the YouTube version is missing the animated segment.
Oh, the Boba Fett costume.
Yep, it's not in it, because it's copyrighted, because it's on a disc somewhere else. Yes, as a supplement.
Yes.
So what it is, people, because don't watch it, essentially it's a variety show merged with Star Wars, right? So that means you're going to have not just Star Wars stuff, but acts and comedy and music and singing as well. So it opens up with Han Solo and Chewbacca. They're fleeing from Imperial forces in this very like low-budget version of the cockpit of the Millennium Falcon, fleeing from stock footage from Star Wars A New Hope. So they don't shoot anything new for TV. They just sort of mix stock footage of the Star Destroyer chasing the Millennium Falcon and all of that. Because he needs to get home to his family, Chewbacca, to his family, because he wants to celebrate Life Day, as many of you know, with his family. So that's nice. Obviously nice. And nice spirits and positivity, obviously. And after we see a very crappy-looking Star Wars logo, the Star Wars Holiday Special logo even looks like, oh my, I don't think this is going to be good. We get a view of Wookiee life. Wookiee domestic life on their home planet in their native dialogue, because you all know they don't speak human language. You know, that's Wookiee language. We know that. And the thing is, we don't get 10 seconds of this or a stretch of it with subtitles. We get a stretch of it, 5 minutes maybe in a row, with no subtitles, with these people in suits just going back and forth. And you're watching this, and is this it? Is this gonna last for an hour and a half?
Oh, man.
Kind of sounds like my podcast.
Kind of sounds like the films that David have been watching.
I mean, it's minutes of it, and there's not even a human for minutes to bounce with, like you had with Han Solo, who understands whatever the language is called officially. Let's call it Wookiee. And eventually you get an actor that I don't know of, because a lot of these are era-specific celebrities from America that I don't personally know of. But a large role goes to someone called Art Carney, who visits the Wookiee family and sets them up with tech every now and again, which is this ham-fisted sort of segue to the variety segment. So the first one is one of the Wookiee kids, I suppose, playing with this holographic kind of viewer. Not playing the sort of Star Wars chess that they do in A New Hope, but he's watching these circus acrobats looking like sea creatures. So yeah, cocaine.
Weird.
Well, I mean, this was not this little like underground station doing this, because they got all the actors in there, and you're just watching it, and is this the 70s way of entertainment, or is this just trippy? And it is trippy. It's just weird the way they feel it with these kind of acts. I mean, they get known acts and singing acts later in the show. That's not as ham-fisted, but this is just surreal. But we cut to Mark Hamill appears in a separate segment. He's being called, you know, we got a vidphone call, essentially, between the Wookiees and Mark Hamill, because they wonder where their beloved Chewbacca is. And Mark Hamill's wide-eyed reacting to nothing is something to behold. And he looks like a Ken doll as well. They made him up in this. He looks like plastic all of a sudden.
Well, he just had his accident, didn't he? Crashed his car. Like, I think the was it the year, same year, just after Star Wars was released? He crashed his car, didn't he? And he had to have his nose broken. So he had to have his nose sorted out. Everyone said he had, like, plastic surgery and stuff, but I think...
He looks plastic. He looks so plastic.
In an interview, he said that he just basically... his nose was broken. He said his nose kind of fixed up. So he looks weird, yeah. There's some really weird still images of him, like, and he does look like a waxwork.
And he tries to encourage the Wookiees to not, B-word, like, give me a smile. And it's just, it's not funny either. It's not like, what a charming little Star Wars sidetrack. You know, it's just odd. But they got them all, except Lucas, but they got them all. And, you know, Mrs. Wookiee is watching cooking TV, some famous comic or something, is dressed up as
That's weird. Yeah, the chef thing's weird as fuck.
Follows the directions of it, and there's stir and stir. You got multiple arms coming out of that.
I've forgotten all this, man. Like, you're bringing it all back.
Are you
now.
Sure we shouldn't watch this, Ken?
No, you should not. It's boring. No, it's boring.
It's terrible. It's so boring. So boring.
But, there's something not sober about any of this. I don't know the singer personally, but, you get an appearance by someone called Diane Carroll here, right? And I think it's one of the elder Wookiees. I have a dad of a grandpa that gets put into this sort of VR simulation thing that I think is them hinting as much as they can that they put grandpa or dad in some sort of sex simulation, because the Diane Carroll comes on the screen and says, I'm your fantasy.
Getting all excited, isn't it? Yeah.
And then she starts singing, you know, not a bad song, but it's just so, are they really doing this? I mean, kids are watching this. I mean, and it's TV, but it's very obviously trippy backgrounds too. And, it's just dull and dragged out. I mean, a 2-hour event at a time. I mean, they get all corny when the Imperial Guards visit the house to find the Wookiee, the rebel Wookiee and all of that. Art Carney gets the Imperial Guards to watch holographic entertainment as well. You know, the crudely inserted sort of way to get them to watch some entertainment that they hired for the show. And therefore they watch the rock group Jefferson Starship have their little bit here. So the stormtroopers are kind of looking at that and are bobbing their heads. And yep, this is what we do. And it looks like the singer of Jefferson Starship is singing into either a mini lightsaber or a big pink dildo.
Oh, we get Princess Leia singing as well.
Eventually, we get Carrie Fisher looking very embarrassed to be singing the Life Day song. Yeah.
She looks like she's like, please kill me.
But we get a cartoon that wasn't in the version I saw, because again, as we said, it had to be cut out for licensing reasons. We get the first emergence of Boba Fett in a cartoon pre-Empire Strikes Back. And I don't know what the cartoon is like. I've seen screenshots of it, and Han Solo's face is like flattened. It looks so elongated.
It's really like stylish. Yeah, it's like it's almost like it's like ultra stylized kind of drawings of him. It's really cool.
Is the cartoon any good? Has anyone seen that?
Yeah, I like it. I think he like rides a dinosaur in it at some point as well, which is amazing. Yeah, I didn't think you'd see that. Yeah,
I'm sort of glad I could save a few minutes. That was what I felt when I watched it. Furthermore, Bea Arthur is in the show. I recognize Bea Arthur. They watch TV again. I mean, there's a subtext here of just watch entertainment, just watch TV. So you get a little Life on Tatooine TV show. And we cut to the bar in the Mos Eisley bar and a cantina with familiar creatures in there. So they got some original props. And there's even stormtroopers in there. And Bea Arthur is serving this guy a drink, but she serves it into his head, because he just pulls his head open and pours the drink into his brain and then closes it up and thank you.
What does B. Arthur have to do with any of this?
What does anything have to do with any of this? I mean, they were trying to capitalize on Star Wars. Cocaine, indeed. Bea Arthur has a song, a singing number, because the stormtroopers has it's a curfew now, so everybody has to leave. So she sings the "Time to Leave" song to every patron in the bar. You know, good night, my friend, la 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 la. And it's just dull and dragged out. And finally, when it all ends, you know, Han Solo and Chewie, they make it to the planet. And the family is reunited, and you get one of the most forced, sugary moments and one of the worst line readings by any iconic actor you've ever seen, with Han Solo looking at the entire Wookiee family and saying, "Your family to me." Followed wow. by a Wookiee grunt, obviously. And just watch Harrison Ford just believe the shit. Just like, I'm gonna.
Ken, I think your recapping of it is actually been more entertaining than the fucking thing itself.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, I really want to watch this now, man.
It was back when Harrison Ford, you could hear his speech, because now he just mumbles his lines. But back then he still spoke. And as you said, Tom, they finally get to celebrate life day, everyone. And it's sort of like this very trippy, heavenly journey, it seems like, for the Wookiees, because you see them in space and they walk into this sort of portal in space, and not on spaceships, but they're sort of walking in space, and they all gather in this sort of cult way.
It's like the end of Greece when they go up in the sky. It's like...
Did they really do that in Greece?
Yeah, they go up in the car, don't they? It's like that, yeah, but with Wookiees, with more hair.
And Life Day, Life Day starts to be celebrated. They all, Princess Leia holds a speech about how nice it is that everyone is gathered up. And she sings a theme tune set to one of John Williams' pieces from Star Wars. It's not the main theme, but and she sings about Life Day. And you just shake your head. It must have been so embarrassing to do this. Like, yes, they were paid, but everybody must have known that this is odd. I mean, what is this doing to our universe, you know? And
I think, didn't George Lucas just give them, whether it was ABC or NBC, just gave them the rights to the characters and they just kind of did it, I think. I don't know whether he had...
You know, so someone did, and someone could rope them all in, and maybe it wasn't evident beforehand that this was going to be a strange TV event. I mean, TV event, lots of viewers. It's, you know, Thanksgiving, around Thanksgiving, everybody's home. It's going to be great. It was not.
It was terrible.
So I wouldn't recommend watching it based on... you know what I would recommend? I haven't seen the riff tracks of it, but there is a riff tracks of it with the Mystery Science Theater 3000 crew talking over this. You should probably combine the viewing of it with them to make it a little bit more bearable, and maybe a lot more bearable, because those guys are funny. And you can get that on digital download and VOD somewhere. Has anyone else sat through it? Paul Fox, did you catch it at one point in your Star Wars fandom?
Yeah, when I was but a lad back in the day, I watched it, and that's the only time I've seen it. I just have been searching for some of the. They have, somebody actually put the cartoon segment up on YouTube, so you can search for it and find it. But the animation looks really weird, almost like it was taken out of the heavy metal movie or something.
Yes, exactly.
Yes, yeah. It's weird, but I really love it for some reason.
Is it like a 10-minute segment or a 5-minute segment? And Boba Fett, is it a key character, or does it just sort of glance by?
Yeah, he was the focus from what I remember. And what I remember is that they were really big in pushing his character as a figure at
yes,
the time.
Yes, before the
and,
film.
Yeah, and the figure, like the first generation, his little missile would shoot off. And then it was a big controversy because some kid apparently shot the missile down his throat, and then so they had to do a quick recall, and then they re-released the toy with the missile just kind of stuck there. You couldn't shoot it anymore.
Yeah.
And the original ones are worth millions, isn't it? The original figures.
Yeah, something.
The ones with those, yeah.
Wow. You know, your memories of it, but, you know, back then, was it fun to see, or did you recognize that this is too long and too boring?
Oh, heck, I was a kid. Anything that had Star Wars on it was gold, so...
Wookiee talk for 20 minutes. Yay.
Yeah.
I mean, for the Wookiee suits and all of that, it looks fine. The props and all of that looks okay. It's not like a cheesy version of it all, but it's just so oddly put together and way too long. A 2-hour TV event of this crap.
But this was indicative of Lucas. I mean, people probably remember it a little bit more fondly, but after Jedi, he had... like 2 Ewok movies, made for TV movies. One of them starring Wilford Brimley, of all people, right? You know, this was something that he did more than once, where he sold rights over to networks in order to, you know, I don't know, pay for a new pair of shoes or something.
Well, he, you know, on his, I don't know if those Ender moves are good or not, but I guess he wanted to control something himself and try to learn the lesson with the TV special. Not saying he's done sound decisions since, but, you know, if you had a creator involved, maybe that there's a greater chance that those products are good. I mean, for the record, I never minded the Ewoks in Jedi, to be honest. I'm one of those, like, they're fine.
Same, yeah.
But were they any good, those Ewoks movies, Paul Fox?
Yeah, they're definitely better than the Christmas special,
right?
To be sure. But yeah, and I remember them being okay for, you know, TV movies, but they do cater towards a younger audience a little bit more. My understanding was that the Ewoks were supposed to be basically cannibalistic teddy bears.
Yeah. Well, we see that in the film. They're about to fry them before C-3PO comes out and helps out.
The TV shows, I just remember, like, there was a little girl who was, I want to say 8 or 7 or 8,
yeah.
Very Drew Barrymore-ish in her look, and she was sort of the central character across the two TV films, if I remember correctly. It's been a while since I've seen them. They're not terrible. I mean, yeah, I mean, I didn't have a problem with the Ewoks either. But again, it was just, you know, another case of Lucas kind of, you know, extracting things and pushing it over to TV.
I mean, how much do you want to follow all the sort of side tracks that the Star Wars universe offers up? I mean, do you read books? Do you watch the TV series, like the Clone Wars TV series? Or how deep of a fan are you in that regard, Paul?
I never got into the extended universe stuff, but yeah, I've seen all of the Clone Wars series. I've watched both seasons of Rebels to date. Anything that's considered an official part of the, you know, the narrative, I try to keep up on. The Clone Wars animated series and the new the Disney property, which is a carryover from that, Star Wars Rebels, are both excellent. I mean, you're talking much better writing than anything we got in the prequels, in terms of some of the storytelling. You know, so if you, a lot of people are not a fan of the animation style, but I kind of got past that very early in the first season, and some of the storytelling they do is far superior to what was going on in the first three movies.
Yeah, you think that the TV land sort of allowed them to sort of sit down and map it out a little bit more, I suppose, and maybe free from restrictions that the movie offered up. And like those prequels, they always gave the impression that it's not like Star Wars was ever superbly acted, but whenever you see clips of like Hayden Christensen's performing style and delivery, it's just flat, super flat. And this is supposed to be such a key journey in the universe, and if that is flat, then you're in trouble, you know.
I haven't even seen episode 2 and 3 the whole way through. I just couldn't put myself through it. Just didn't appeal to me at all after the first one. Like, I think I tried to watch the second one, Attack of the Clones. I just couldn't get through it. Just doesn't appeal to me at all.
I mean, watching A New Hope, recently, like, I don't find a lot of plot holes, but it's not an untouchable classic or anything, but it's still good fun. And one of the things I noticed this viewing, it didn't get me irritated anyway, but it was one of those, like, huh, that's unfair. At the end, they don't give Chewie a medal.
I know, yeah, I've always noticed that. It's so bad.
They bring him up to the whole podium, walk him up, and they don't give him a fucking medal.
He worked just as hard as everybody else.
Yeah. And it ends with him roaring too. Clearly, like, uncool.
Where's the fucking medal?
What the shit?
Well, there's a new property that came out this past summer. It's a Disney show called Droid Tales, and it's a Lego. It's one of the Lego productions. So, like, you know, the Lego movie. It's in Lego style, and it's a 6-episode series or 5-episode series, and it's actually pretty good. It picks up right after the end of Jedi. With C-3PO, somebody kidnaps R2-D2 and C-3PO has to go track him down. And basically along the way, C-3PO retells all of the story in short from the first, from all 6 films and a crossover from one of the Rebels episodes. But they actually have an episode that makes that point where, you know, why Chewbacca didn't get a medal at the ceremony. It's really funny. It's very, you know, it's very much in that Lego style of humor.
What was the point? What was their humorous point? Why he didn't get a medal? Too big or too tall?
No. There was a medal that, and I think R2 was bringing them out, and C-3PO actually dropped it and broke it. at the last minute. And so, like, Leia just grabbed the two and ended up giving it to the two guys. So, yeah.
Yeah, so that was fun. Might watch Empire now that I have the Laserdisc set out. Like, my player was broken for a little while. So he couldn't turn to side B properly. So I haven't watched Laserdisc for a while, but it works now. But yeah, let's just finish this one off, on air. I said it on the Facebook group, but thank you everybody for your support, listeners. I hope I and we can do even better next year and evolve next year. But I've enjoyed every minute of it, and that, you know, is due to having all of you guys, including David Lamb, who had to pop out. So thank you, David, for coming on and for your contributions this year. But it is due to you guys. I do a lot of the work and editing and prep and all that, but it's due to you guys. Having someone to talk to is a key for making it, like, the atmosphere sort of come to life. So I hope that fun translates to a listenable show for you listeners. So that's all I have to say. So that's a Merry Christmas and Happy New Year from my side. So let's go around the room and see if anybody wants to say anything or get the hell out of here. So Stuart, what do you want to say? That's
I'll
great.
Tune in next week.
That's poignant. That's marvellous. Well, I'm glad you can set aside time to come on this show. I mean, do you guys do a Christmas special on Films and Swearing?
Yes, we just partially finished it yesterday. Let's see, I recorded a conversation with Big Mike, recorded the full episode with Andy and Guffy yesterday. And later on tonight, I'm going to record the last part of the special with Trevor from Mass Movieside UK, then edit that together. I think it's going to be close to 3 hours. And that's breaking down, like, the best movies of the year, the worst movies of the year, what's coming up next year, and bits and bobs.
So it'll be Marvel cast for you guys. Paul Fox, you have your East Screen, West Screen. Did you have a chance, or will you have a chance to record one on the road with Kevin?
Yeah, well, I'm not sure. I've got to try and touch base with him.
Because he's also in America, by the way. Both of them are normally in Hong Kong, but both have gone home and home to visit friends and all of that.
Yeah, he's over in the far time zone on the West Coast. I'm not sure if we're gonna have time. I've still got the episode we recorded right before I came over here for Aaron's movie Port of Call, is sitting in my to do box. I've got to get a chance to try and sit down and edit that. Hopefully before the holiday gets here. So yeah, I don't know if we'll have any kind of a special. We had talked about doing that, maybe a special Star Wars episode if we could make the time. But I don't have any equipment here. I'd have to, you know, I'm not sure about the sound quality, how that would sound.
Well, for the purposes of being on the road, at least this sounds good. So if you can record on your phone or something like that, I don't know. Maybe there's some lo-fi devices that can be spliced together.
Yeah. We'll see what happens. If not, we'll be back to just talking normal Hong Kong stuff come January.
Well, are you motivated to when you come back in January to sink your teeth into Donnie versus Tyson?
Yeah,
not so much. I like Donnie and I like Ip Man, but I'm just not this third film is not all that appealing. I mean, and we've talked before, you know, about the appearance of a character playing Bruce Lee. So I'm kind of interested to see that. But actually, there's a Steffi movie with from Patrick Kong with her and Alex Fong that I'm probably a bit more excited to see.
Teen romance versus man fighting. That's what Paul Fox picks, and that's okay. You know what, guys? I don't know if you've felt that, Tom or Stuart. Any like, if man is coming, all right. It seems kind of dead to me.
I got invited to a press screening on Christmas Eve in Glasgow.
What?
I am really annoyed I can't go.
Oh.
Like, I can't leave my family on Christmas Eve and go to Glasgow.
See Donnie in? Yeah, you can. I'm sure it's fucking legal.
All the problems we're having with Bridget just now and...
Sweet, you take it this way, pal. I'll jump on the train in 4 hours. I don't want anything for Donnie.
there might actually be a show in Birmingham. I'm going to have a look at the email again.
That's all, yeah. Let me know, man. I bet that's weird, because when's it coming out in
Hong January? Well, oh, sorry.
Okay, so there's an early screening over here. That's cool.
At the same day, it opens in Hong Kong. It's like the 24th officially in Hong Kong, and press screening in Glasgow on the same day.
I'm excited for it. I think the second one was not great, but I'm still pumped for it. I'm going to be interested to see how they work in Mike Tyson. how, you know, how with his tattoo and modern day clothing, Is he being worked into a film? We'll see.
Yeah, it's presumably still set in the 50s or 60s.
Unless there's some weird time travel element going on. Also, we'll have to see.
Gotta come back to me, to the future, to beat him up. Otherwise, you'll be an asshole if you don't beat him up. Yeah, what about you, Stuart? Excited for it?
Yeah, when it comes, well, I'm going to have to wait for the DVD now, but I'll watch it. I came out quite enjoying the second one. Like, just out of just the harmless entertainment side of it. Like, just watching the fun between, like, Donnie Yen and Samo throwing tables about.
There's a couple of good scenes in it, yeah. I just felt like that ending was really weak on it. Like, just very, very, more of a kind of a... just a kind of weaker ending compared to the first one. Like, didn't really kind of build up. Was a bit kind of like damp firework.
I have this kind of the same feeling. For me, the Samo Donnie fight was kind of the peak of the series. And after that, I mean, anything else is kind of just downhill. I mean, even Mike Tyson, he doesn't, for me, compare to a Samo fight. So I'm just not, I don't know. Also, I mean, I'm going to see it, but I'm just not that excited for it.
Kind of unprecedented that it gets simultaneous premieres in a couple of places. You don't hear that often with Hong Kong movies. So it must have some traction in a couple of different markets. I've not seen either of them. I have Ip Man Final Fight on my Netflix queue, because that's the only one I've kind of been interested to see, because I like the look and the idea of Anthony Wong playing Ip Man, but that might be totally misguided excitement. But yeah, there it is. Okay, anything else you want to say, Paul? Any closing words before we leave?
No, I hope everybody has a happy holiday, Merry Christmas or Festivus or whatever you celebrate. You know,
happy
be safe,
Hanukkah.
Be happy. Yeah, exactly.
Life Day, for heaven's sake.
Life Day.
Everybody gathers together for an hour and just sits and do wookie noises towards each other for an hour. That's Life Day. And cocaine, of course.
And cocaine, of course, yeah.
And love in 3D.
That'll be 3 hours then. We only have a 1 hour celebration. How are we going to do that? Any closing words, my 12-year-old friend, Tom KW?
Yeah, it's been a great year for the show. Been on some great shows, watched some great films, and had some great chats, great talks, and Merry Christmas, you filthy animals. That's it. Tom out. Drops the mic.
Yeah, that was...
Was that hardcore?
That was your knuckles dropping.
That was a fucking pipe bomb.
Righty, guys. Thank you very much. And that's us out. So Merry Christmas, everybody. And speak to you again early next year.
All the kids go to bed each night to dream what Santa brings them, unless they're Jewish or Muslim or some other chip religion. Crackling fires to keep me warm, and my collection of Asian porn. Cradle my bells and work my horn, it's a keep on trucking. Last year sucking, midget chucking, slap the puckin. How much wood could a woodchuck check in? Merry fucking Christmas.